make your phone. Yeah, but it sounds good though. I don't know what was going on, but it sounded good. Hi, everybody. I'm Stevie B. I'm a recovering alcoholic and a member of the West Side Men's Group and also a member of the Golden Text Group in Dania. Step 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. We spoke last week about the Pagels. Pride, anger, greed, gluttony, envy, lust, and sloth. The 7 deadly sins, 7 defects of character. First of all, how was your Thanksgiving? Great, right? Full of gluttony. Who had a fight with their family members on Thanksgiving? Raise your hand. Full of wrath. Who felt bad after on Friday morning? You said, "I'm going to start a diet. I'm going to go on a fast before Christmas." Who pledged they're going to lose weight? Come on, be honest. Come on, really? Come on. Guilt. Every day, we attempt to battle these defects with this. And step 6, which we're going to backtrack to a little bit, talks about having God, being entirely ready to God, remove these defects of character. And I don't know about you, but I'm really relieved that I'm not in the battle to remove my own defects of character. Because the battle does not, every day, it's almost like watching a tidal wave come over the banks and saying, "I'm going to just stick my finger in that little hole and maybe the entire ocean will stay behind." I have to remember who's doing the removing of the defects of character. And there's people in here tonight that are saying to themselves, "Well, I choose not to believe in God." And I get it. I understand. I get it. Because it's much more easier to believe in what we can see. And I understand, because I was there at one time, the statement that I don't believe in God. Hence makes this step hard. Step 6, when they're going to get into step 7 in a second. Being entirely ready to have somebody that I don't believe in remove my defects of character. It makes it harder. This step is harder if you don't believe in God. And for myself, a great analogy is whether I believe in God or not, He still exists. And once I can get on that page, once I can stop trying to fight the idea of is God either is or He isn't, what is my choice to be? For 34 years, I tried to prove that there was no God. For 34 years, I tried to prove that I could drink when I wanted to. I could have a glass of wine when I wanted to. I could take Xanax when I wanted to. I tried to prove that there was no God for 34 years. And the result was disastrous. So whether I believe in God or not, God exists. I don't like gravity, to be honest with you. I'm not a big fan of gravity. And sometimes I say to myself, you know what? I'm not going to believe in gravity. Today I'm going to have a no gravity day. I wear a shirt that says, "No gravity today," you know, one of these type of things. Because gravity has not been kind to me. I just turned 50, as you know, and my pecs used to be up in the air, and they used to be up in this level here, and gravity has taken its toll on my pecs. My pecs are now down here. These are my pecs. Okay, almost like in the midsection. That's the pecs are supposed to be here. They went down to here. Whether I want to believe in gravity or not, gravity exists. If I jump off the side of a building and I say, you know what, I'm one of these people, my parents told me that gravity is not real, so I choose not to believe in it. And if I jump off the side of the building, the results are the same. Gravity wins 100% of the time, unless you're in outer space, and then there's no gravity. So gravity wins 100% of the time. The sooner I get into the idea that gravity is real, I'm not going to fight it. That's the same thing with God, the one that created gravity. Once I realize that being entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character, that's my only shot. It's the only shot that I have. Today we're going to talk about step 7, which is about humility. And I just thought how appropriate what just happened at the restaurant across the street. I'm sitting with all these major movers and players, and Elliot and Richard Spike and Billy from Philly and all these guys with names, you know, Cubby, because there's no real names in Alcoholics Anonymous. Like Richard Spike's last name is Spike. Of course it's not Spike. I'm with James the Jew. I don't think his last name is Jew. I think it's just James, and I just call him James the Jew because he always had a gigantic beard. I'm sitting around with all these people, and they're all talking about the program, and a guy, and I stand up, and my name is on my shirt tonight because I had my name from my treatment center, which is JC's. It says Stevie B. Guy came up to me. I figured he was going to say to me, you know, we're coming over next door to see you at the speaker series or something else into that effect. I've heard you speak. Maybe I heard your tapes on online, any of those things. So he walks up to me. I pause with all humility because I want to act gracious, whatever he's going to say to me. And he says, "Are you?" I go, "Yes, I am." He says, "Where is the bathroom?" I said, "It's right over there." He thought I worked at the Outback. He wanted to know if I was a waiter. In my mind, I thought he was going to tell me what a great speaker I was. In his mind, he wanted to know where the restroom was. Humility is this thing that once you think you have it, it's gone. If you fake it, people can tell. And it's the one ingredient they say that we need to have in order to have these shortcomings removed. Sherry, you like that, Sherry, huh? Humility is a word, as a word and as an ideal, has a very bad time of it in our world. This is from the 12 and 12, which I highly recommend having. Not only is the idea misunderstood, the word itself is often intensely disliked. Many people haven't even a nodding acquaintance with humility as a way of life. Much of everyday talk we hear and a great deal of what we read highlights man's pride in his own achievements. With great intelligence, men of science have been forcing nature to disclose her secrets. The immense resources now being harnessed promise such a quality of material blessings that many have come to believe that a man-made millennium lies just ahead. Belief in our own power. I'm sure, Cubby, you're 10 years. So 40 plus years, you ran your own life on Cubby's terms. Right? 40 plus years. Freddie, for 50 plus years, ran your life on Freddie's terms. By the way, I love how John was able to give his brother the medallion. It was so beautiful. And what Freddie said, there's nothing like what you just said. It was incredible. And everybody wants to clap. Everybody felt what you said. How amazing is it in this program that at 50 plus years of age, we can dedicate our 1-year medallion and have our entire life change direction. And when Freddie was speaking, you could feel the humility, yes? You can feel the sincerity. You can't fake the way Freddie spoke. The moment you try to fake humility, there's we almost have like a bat sense. Like sometimes Richard Spike, he puts on the humility vest. It's very easy to see through. It's much easier when he's just being Spike. When Freddie spoke up here tonight, there was not a person in here that didn't get it. That's the power of humility. We think humility is actually a sign of weakness, but humility is actually a sign of strength. Our real purpose, this is from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. That's our maximum, that's our purpose, our real purpose. And who has it better than us? We come in, we make a real attempt at turning our life and our will over to the care of God as we understand Him, wherever you're at in that place. We believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. We have a desire to get out the garbage in our lives, so we do a fourth step and a fifth step that we share with another human being that we spoke about last week and 2 weeks ago. We share that stuff with another human being. We give that to God. Then by that time, already our defects of character are glaring at us, or at least our sponsor is helping us to see them. And then we come to God and we say, you know what, I'm entirely ready to have you remove these defects of character in my life. Doesn't mean it's going to happen all at once. Like when we said, God, please help us, and we were struck sober. Many of us in here were struck sober. If you understand what I'm saying, you were struck sober. Cubby's in a trunk, in a car. I got to find out what's going on here. This person is called like 700 times. This must be very, 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 very serious. Very serious. Sweetheart, what's wrong?
Hi, Daddy.
Hi, baby. Well, baby, I'm at a meeting telling people about God. Where's mommy? Okay, is everything okay? Okay, sweetie, okay. Josh, you called me about 8 times, baby. Yeah, okay. Okay, I love you. I love you, baby. I love you. I would never answer, never, never, never. There was, but someone calls 8 times in a row, that's serious business. And you know what? That was serious business. That was serious business. That was family business. And here's my 6-year-old who was giving me a lot of trouble yesterday and this morning. See, and I just want to tell you, I love you, Daddy. And Joshua knows what I do every night. Joshua knows I do meetings and I tell people about God. And last night he asked if he can come to work with me. So he said, can I come to church with you last night? Which isn't tomorrow. Last night's not a church night, but it's a meeting night. And he said, can I come to church with you to tell people about God? That's a gift of the program. What Freddie shared about is a gift of the program. That a brother was able to come up here and share about his brother. 2 years ago, by the way, that's my partner that spoke tonight, John. And 2 years ago, we were sitting around, we were having a great day. I don't know what it was. We were eating. It probably had something to do with food. Because he's Greek and I'm Italian. It always has to do with something about food. And we were having a great experience. Whatever it was, probably Steve was cooking some barbecue at his house. And John looks over at me and he says, this is a perfect day. Except my brother's still out there and my son's still out there. And now his brother's in a year. His daughter is sober several years, John's daughter. His son-in-law is sober several years. Their baby doesn't have to see a mom and dad drinking. Isn't that amazing? That's the humility of this thing. So I had 34 years to try to figure this thing out. I had 34 good years to figure this out. I came into the program at 22. Stayed sober till I was 30. Decided I could drink wine, even though I had never drank wine, but I wanted to try drinking wine. I still want to try drinking wine in my mind. I think I could drink fine wine. And so I go out, I drink some fine wine, which I never could find the fine wine, so I never got very fine. 6 months I had no problems. One time I took alcohol, it was never fine, but I took alcohol and pills together and then I passed out. But for 6 months, I had no problems. And then after one night, you know, after 6 months of trying to control your drinking, and I did very, very well. I never got drunk in 6 months. But I went out of town. And then when I went out of town, then I could get drunk. It was my first drunk. And it was great. I want to tell you, for anyone that thinks I'm going to say that that getting drunk it was not great, it was great. 7 years not drinking, and then I go to the bar. I sobered up when I'm 22, so there's a lot of drinks I didn't try. Now I have money. I'm in Minneapolis. Nobody can tell me not to drink. My wife is not there. I'm a newlywed. And I say to the bartender, I say, and one thing about New Yorkers in Minneapolis, we're already kind of like almost celebrity status when we walk into the bar. And they hear your accent. They're like, where are you from? I'm like, New York. They're like, wow, Al Pacino. I'm like, that's right. That's a friend of mine. You Italian? That's right. That's right, I am. So, of course, my accent got thicker, and I said to the bartender, because I always wanted to try special drinks that I never tried when I was a kid. So I said, bartender, I'd like to have a sex on the beach. This is a true story. There's no exaggeration in this. And bartender gave me a sex on the beach. My first drink in a bar since I was in college. Now I'm 31. I was managing to, you know, sneak drinks in the house, but not a sex on the beach. You got to prepare that, which I didn't know how to do. So I said, bartender, I'm going to have sex on the beach. So she gives me a sex on the beach, and I'm in a great mood because I'm drinking. I just had one drink, and I ordered food. Because for me, drinking and food, the whole thing, I wanted the whole go it all together. And the guy who asked me if I was Italian from New York and if I knew Al Pacino, we were talking. We were having a great time together. He starts naming some other Italian stars. And I knew them all. You know, you know Sylvester Stallone? Of course I know Sylvester Stallone. You kidding me? Everybody knows each other in New York. My second drink, I said, I would like a fuzzy navel. All these drinks I heard, I always wanted to try fuzzy navel. I ordered the guy at the end of the bar some food. We're having a great time talking about different things. You know Al Pacino? I know Al Pacino. He's friends with Robin. We all hang out together in New York. Forget about it. Oh my God, you're unbelievable. You talk just like the guy in the movies. I go, I know, we know each other. So I order him some food, some chicken fingers or something. We're having a great time. And then I ordered myself a kamikaze, because I hadn't had a kamikaze since college. Kamikaze, I remember, but it was like 8 years. So now I got a fuzzy navel, and now I have a sex on the beach, and now I have a kamikaze. Now something happened when I drank the kamikaze. I don't know how that works. I'm the life of the bar. I'm buying people. We're having a great time talking about Italians from New York. Having a great time with that guy. And then I drank the kamikaze. When the kamikaze went down, the guy, he's still having a conversation with me, and then he asked me about another Italian from the movies, and I said to him, you talking to me? Another guy came out. A guy that I didn't even remember was in there. There's another guy in there. And that guy came out. And that guy did not want to speak to that guy at the end of the bar. James, I know you can relate to this story. James in the back can relate to that. That guy did not want to talk about Italians from New York. And that guy was offended that that guy was even speaking to him. And I told that guy to shut the F up. That guy was not prepared for that, because we were just having a conversation a second ago and having a great time. He thought I was acting out in the movies. I was not. That guy still lives in there. That guy is in there. You know how I know? Because he has shown his head over the last 16 years. He's peeked out. He's said some things. I realized that that guy's still in there because some of the talk sounded the same. And after three drinks, he managed to find his way out. I have to be really careful at all times to not think I've arrived in any way. Because once we arrive, and in this room there's no big shots. You know the saying, one shot, we're all shot. There's no big shots in Alcoholics Anonymous. We're all, it's all level at the foot of the bar. My whole goal is to try to be closer to my Creator and further away from Vinny from Queens. Really from Brooklyn. He was from Brooklyn. That guy was from Brooklyn. I'm from Long Island. The guy that came out was from Brooklyn. I don't even know if I've been to Brooklyn, but that's where that guy was from. For sure. So how do I keep Vinny from Brooklyn from coming out on a daily basis? Surrender. Now, humility is not thinking of ourselves less. Excuse me, it's not thinking less about ourselves. But it is thinking about ourselves less. I don't know if you heard that saying that I'm not much, but I'm all I think about. That's the opposite of humility. Ego, edging God out. Because there's no room for God if you're thinking about you all the time. There is no room for the Creator if you're the Creator. There's no room for having humility to remove shortcomings if you're going to do your own removal of your shortcomings. How many times have you heard in a meeting? You know, we hear it all the time. Working on my defects of character. How does that work? Working on your defects of character. For 34 years, I tried to work on my defects. I got almost nowhere. Mason is here tonight, and I lived in a halfway house with Mason after I relapsed and decided I was going to drink fine wine, and then fine wine took me to living in a halfway house. Isn't it crazy how that works? So my fine wine experiment got me divorce papers and restraining order living in a halfway house. That was the fine wine experiment. Didn't work. I'm living with Mason, and I take this, because our roommate Eddie was a Jesus guy. So I decided I was going to be a spiritual guy myself. I started praying at dinner. Started praying before I ate. And I said to myself, I'm going to be a God guy too. This seems very attractive. And I go to Oakwood Plaza. And I'm outside the Office Depot. And I pull out abruptly. And a guy smacks the back of my car. But you know, Billy from Philly, that can make you very upset, and very upset can make you angry, especially if you think you hit somebody. And I got out of the car, and I go, what's your problem? And I'm about 3 months sober, so I'm pretty sober. And I'm practicing my humility. You know, I'm practicing being a godly guy. I'm praying before I go to meals, and I'm praying in the morning. I am praying on my knees in the morning, as my sponsor said, and I am thanking God at the end of the night, so I think I'm pretty spiritual. Trying to clean up my cursing, which is not going great. Every day I have a list of defects of character that I'm going to work on. One of them was cursing. Mason knows we had cursing. We had lust, which was not going great. And then I had anger, my top three. So I back out. He slams the back of my car. I get out. What's the problem? We go at it right there in the parking lot. Full fight. Fist the whole nine yards. It's not like I'm in some secluded backyard of some, you know, I'm in the middle of Office Depot parking lot. I'm in a halfway house. I think I just got up off my knees like an hour ago. I'm really trying to work on my defects of character. But my defects of character are not just going to go away because I'm trying to work on them. I literally had to make a decision. By the way, I want to tell you a little great story about that. And this is not, this is all true. And this is what I feel that God said to me. And I'm not saying that I hear from God, but I feel like I heard it from my spirit. My wife's sister came over from the country of Colombia, and I was living in the halfway house with Mason. And I'm a recovering drug addict as well as an alcoholic. And my drug of choice, well, it is everything really, but it comes from the country of Colombia where my wife's from. And her sister comes and visits me in the halfway house, and she gives me this beautiful crucifix with emeralds in it and 18 karat gold from Colombia. And she says, we believe in you. We believe you can do this. Now, understand, I'm a couple of weeks sober. She gives me a cross that's 18 karat gold with emeralds. That's like a black card for a person in a halfway house. That's a... I get into this altercation in Oakwood Plaza. The cross flies off. I'm driving away, completely scared out of my mind. I'm on probation. I'm on paper. I'm in a halfway house. And I've just committed a felony in the parking lot. I go to grab the cross. It's not there. And I believe, to this day, that something in my spirit said, don't go around with that on your neck, the way you're acting. From that day, I made a decision. There's no way I'm going to clean up my voice. I'm not going to be able to clean up my language. I'm not going to be able to clean up my fist fighting, because that's all I know. Anyone from the Northeast will tell you that's all we know. Is that we hit first and ask for forgiveness later. I've never raised my hands in a fist fight since that day, and I was getting into a fight monthly before that for 34 years. Now, how is that? One day I'm drinking, the next day I'm sober, one day I'm fighting, the next day I never hit anyone again. How is it? The utter humiliation of failing again, accompanied by the power of humility, knowing that I can't clean it up myself. You see how those two words go in? The utter humiliation that we're not going to be able to do it on our own, with the humility that only God can do that for us. And when those two things go together, we realize that we can do all things through God who strengthens us. And it's here. It's not like don't think I'm making this up and I'm coming to you from a church angle or a shul angle. I'm coming to you from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And how do we know this? Let's go to step 7's prayer. Which is, my Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I now pray that you remove every single defect of character that stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me the strength as I go out and do your bidding. That's a powerful prayer. My Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, because I've just experienced all of me in the fifth step. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Because there's some good stuff that comes out in the fifth step. We realize that we're not as bad as... We're not the only bad person on the planet. Because the other person that we're sharing with is also sharing, oh, I did some of that too. So my Creator, I am now willing to have you clean me up. How powerful is that? Who needed a meeting tonight? Be honest, who needed a meeting tonight? Like, I just needed a meeting. Danny, did you just need a meeting tonight? Tonight I needed a meeting. I was thinking way too much about me today. So much the fact that when the guy came up to me in the restaurant, I thought, you know. And he said to me, are you? And I said, yes. And he said, well, where's the restroom? You know, like that. And I turned to Elliot, who's got a gazillion years and is just a hero of mine, and I really mean that. He's one of those heroes of mine in Alcoholics Anonymous that I really believe encompasses humility. And I went over to him. I said, I got to tell you a great thing that just happened. God just reminded me of exactly what my job is. My job is to point people towards the restroom. That's it. I was a second ago, I was excited about who I was, and a second later I realized I'm really a restroom attendant. And how blessed are we that we get to do that? He squinted at my name, he couldn't figure out if it said Outback, and asked me where the bathroom was. And I just felt like the hand of God was just reminding me that tonight was medallion night. Tonight was alcohol. You need a meeting. God either is or he isn't. What is our choice? I mean, is that such a difficult question? If we take a look at our life on how well we did, is that such a difficult question? We have people, but the great thing about it is, as I said in the first couple weeks, our ideals before Alcoholics Anonymous were absolute purity, absolute honesty, absolute unselfishness, and absolute love. You know, those are the four principles of the Oxford group. That was their principles. I mean, look at the back row back there. Billy from Philly, Freddie the ex-criminal, John from Long Island, Steve J. I mean, think about it, any of those guys hitting absolute purity in the next century. It's never going to happen. Seventy-eight years ago, Neil, we would have been talking about the four absolutes. Instead, we're talking about humbly asking God to remove our shortcomings. I mean, that gives us a lot of room to work with, doesn't it, Danny? That gives us a lot of room to work with. The last thing I want to say is this. Right now, between step 5, 6, and 7, we should have a great feeling that we're not in charge. Which, I don't know if that has anything for you, but I'm excited about that. I'm excited that there's already a program in place. That on any given day, I could probably take myself too seriously. On any given day, I can probably think about myself too much. But then there's going to be a humbling experience. If my eyes are open, and I'm willing to see, right, Joe? If I'm willing to see that God is in control and it's not me, I'm going to see the hand of God give me a little gentle tushy slap. Like right before my son called, I was ready to give you some amazing stuff. You didn't get that talk. I'll just let you know. You got the B talk. But you were about to get the A talk tonight. You were about to get the supercharged, on fire, Mount Zion, Ten Commandments talk. And then my son called. He said, "Daddy, where are you?" I said, "Hi, baby, I'm right here." He's running the show. And it's our job to let him. Pride, anger, gluttony, envy, lust, and sloth, and greed. They're going to pop up daily. Not all at the same time. Just when you think you're cured of one of them, and you make a statement like this to one of your friends, "Boy, I used to really suffer from that lust. Thank God he removed that from me." And you take one of those great stances, and then in comes one of these kitty cats. I never even heard that, kitty cats. And you realize lust didn't go away. And especially when you just turn your head the wrong way, and then the kitty cat's husband comes over to you, and you realize anger's still around. So it's going to be a work in progress, amen? And we got plenty of time to do it one day at a time. God bless you guys. I'll see you next time.